This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Shackles Are Off podcast. This week's guest is a pretty cool guy, actually. Callum Flynn. He is the captain of the England Disabled 11. And I tell you what, if you think disability hinders your ability at cricket in any kind of way, shape or form, it definitely doesn't. He's probably in the top 99.9% of cricketers in the country. So there you go. Have it from me. He's a really nice guy. Looking forward to talking to him. Certainly not in the top 99.9% cricketers in the country are myself and Chris Millard, with Somerset seam bowler Jack Brooks, who definitely is as well, by the way. That's not even up for discussion. Brooksy, first of all, you watched Millard and I on a live stream playing cricket for the Barmy Army in the Fans World Cup event last week. We loved it. It was actually one of the best days of the summer for me. It was great. It was so fun. But what did you think of watching us? Because it was a bit of role reversal.
Yeah, mate, it was hilarious, for one. But all bullshit aside, genuinely, pleasantly surprised, particularly with you, Greggy, who has talked yourself down that much. you bowled leg spin around the wicket and spun it and landed it. Like, that's not an easy skill to master. To say you're not very good when you're bowling little leggies like that. And Millard plays quite regularly. He can hold a bat and he knows where he's bowling it. And he doesn't pick himself up or talk himself down. But yeah, you were naughty little leggies, weren't you?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, pies get poles was the phrase that got shouted to me a few times from the boundary. But it was good fun.
I really enjoyed it. It was. It looked like good fun at the sixth event. I'm sure you two have got a few more stories than me on it.
Well, it was great, Chris, wasn't it? But Barbados were the champions representing kind of the West Indies. The way it worked, it was kind of fan groups and stuff playing. And it was, we were obviously playing for the Barmy Army team. I think we probably underestimated slightly, Chris, how seriously the other nations might take it. There was a rest of the world team. They had a couple of overseas pros taking part. Barbados Tourism Board had sort of laid on a team and they were awesome. Bangladesh, I think it was genuinely Bangladesh's ODI team as well turned up.
They were well kitted out, weren't they? Very well kitted out.
They were. Full green ODI kit.
There was one point in the game between the West Indies and ourselves where the guest of honour of the day was Joel Garner, and he was watching. He was probably on his fourth bottle of rum at this stage. It was quite late on, about 3 p.m. And I mean litre bottles as well. I'm not talking, as you'll hear on the podcast, which is to come. But he, at one point, got up and absolutely shouting, bellowing, because the umpire had just given a second front foot no ball to one of the Barbados bowlers for a questionable front foot no ball. And Big Joel did not like that, and the West Indies fans were up in arms. But it's safe to say that we could have probably had 300 no balls, and I don't think we'd have chased down the 89 they got in six overs.
It was a good day, though, wasn't it? It was a good day. We had a good fun.
Fantastic day.
A good fun. I mean, we did get one over on the Bharat Army as well, which was nice because obviously India had just got one over on England at Lord's a couple of days prior. That was a shame. Headingley to come. We'll have put this podcast out probably just as that next test is starting. And to be honest with you, I was so disappointed with Lord's and so gutted for England. I've not actually looked at our tables yet for run scorers and wicket takers. But I was still going along really nicely because I'd had Rooty, so we're happy.
I think I'm out of it, so I wouldn't even be bothered about that anymore already, I think.
Well, I've got Rooty at 600 runs, so... And he looks good for it. He looks great for it.
He's going to piss that, mate. He'll have that by the fourth test.
I hope he does. I hope he does. But yeah, absolutely. Chris, you're there. Trumpet's back. Barmy Army's back. Be a good week, Headingley.
Yeah, very excited to be back. We've obviously had two tests, be it Trent Bridge and Lords. We've not had any trumpet action yet this series. And maybe it's the little boost the England boys need to get them over the line. Got very close at Lords, but I'm hoping that Headingley can be a really good test for them and they can bounce back and beat the Indians. I've got quite a good feeling about this test match. The strength that's been added with Milan and a few of the familiar faces is nice to see, and hopefully the boys can do it and do Rooty a favour and help out a bit as well.
The Western Terrace, that's where it's at, isn't it?
It's Headingley, it's like a afternoon fever. It's fairly timid in early doors, and then there's like a little ripple, isn't there, from about 1 p.m.
And it explodes.
Filter, and then it just explodes, as Stokesy showed us at the last test match at their place.
So good. I think that's the thing, though, isn't it? There's still a bit of that good feeling hanging around from that Stokesy test match, isn't there? And I think a lot of people actually are turning up going, all right, come on, we're going to see the same again.
We've actually got a standing trumpeter today, one, because Finchie is filming a Hollywood film at Abbey Road Studios. No. So he's been excused from duties for the day. And the trumpeter we have standing in is actually the trumpeter from Madness.
Seriously?
A Test cricket fan. Yeah, so you'll see him on your
baggy
television
trousers.
Screens. All the baggy trousers. I wonder if he'll have baggy trousers on.
That's welcome to the house of fun.
Sounded good in a Yorkshire accent, that, Brooksy. It was good. Well done.
I hope Headingley's a house of fun on the next Test match. But obviously, Lords, as disappointing as the result was, to have a test match going into the last day with all three results possible, and it ended up being a result which you'd think shouldn't have happened, really. But fair play to India. They're a decent team at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah, not off.
Not bad, are they?
Not.
But it was good for test cricket as well.
It was. The Bumrah, Anderson stuff, he's been having a few words, Brooksy, about that, you were saying. I've not read this thing that he said, but... It's got a bit spicy.
Yeah. I can't remember it word for word, but I saw something today that he'd spoken to someone in the press about, for the first time in his career, feeling like the first time he felt a bowler wasn't actually trying to get him out, but was trying to rough him up a little bit. In 11 ball over with the no balls from Bumrah, if he's done that on purpose, it's obviously bang out of order and not in the spirit of the game, is it? There's other ways to intimidate batsmen. You don't really need to intimidate Jimmy that much anyway, do you? He's not exactly going to hang around all day. But obviously, England didn't like it, and they obviously piped up and tried to make it hard for the Indians, and then the Indians came back even harder, fair play to them. So it'll make it potentially a pretty spicy rest of the series.
Sets it up nicely. We like a bit of spice, though. We like a bit of needle. Talking about Jimmy... He is sort of the theme for something that we're going to go at, Brooksy. So you've got a bit of cricket coming up. End to the season, finishing with a flourish with Somerset this year, because actually it's, the T20 competition is still going, and you've been very much part of that this year. You've reinvented yourself as a white ball man. It's been good to see. It's been good to, struggled a bit with injury and stuff. But you are... you reckon one of the oldest county players still playing, but certainly nowhere near the oldest. And you're going to say...
Fine wine, but not the finest.
Yeah. I like that. I do like that, Chris. Very good.
I've just been a bit more aware of my age over the last couple of years. I've been the oldest in the Somerset squad the last 2 years.
Right.
And you look around the circuit and you think, oh, I'm not that old compared to a few of them. And I saw earlier this summer, I trust. Sort of tossed up a little bit of what I could find of who was older than me on the circuit. And I reckon there's 15 fellas on the men's first class circuit who are older than me.
Okay, right. Played this year, and that's just any professional game. So T20, List A, County Championship.
Yeah, correct, mate. Which makes me feel a bit younger, to be honest. But a few of them have already retired sort of mid-season, so...
Oh, right, OK. Right, well, this is good. Chris and I, we might struggle for this a little bit. Mm. And also, I feel a bit bad saying, is he older than you? Because if they, you know, if they're only like my age, we'll get mightily offended. So that's, there we go. I'm trying to think. We'll start, I mean, Millard, you start us off with one, an obvious one, a Barmy Army legend, despite never having played for England.
Yeah, I'm going to have to start off with Ricky Clark. That wasn't the one you expected.
No, it's not. Is Ricky Clark on there, Brooksy?
Previous podcast guest.
He
surely you've got to start with the
Yes, mate.
Guest.
Yeah, Ricky is, I think he's like 39, 40 maybe. And
yeah.
He's obviously announced some retirement, bless him. But yeah, he's definitely older than me.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good man,
Lewin.
Good podcast that we did with him, by the way. If you've not heard it, go back and have a listen. Very funny man. Jimmy Anderson.
Yeah,
obviously.
Dan Stevens, obviously.
Yeah, that's the one I thought you were going to say.
I know, mate.
You love him. You love Darren Stevens. Who else will there be? Sir Alistair Cook, is he older than you, Brooksy?
No, mate, he's younger than me by about 6 months or so, I think. I was going to say, I could give you a few clues.
Let's get the obvious ones first. I reckon Luke Wright.
I don't think he's older than me either, to be honest.
Ugh.
Yeah, he is. Just go with it. Ravi Bapara?
No, Ravi's younger than me.
You are really old, aren't you?
You are old, Brooksy.
Thanks. Cheers.
James Hildreth?
No, he's younger than me, although he looks a lot older than me. Yeah, one of my teammates down at Somerset. How about a former England off-spinner? Plays at Surrey.
Gareth Batty.
There we go. Greggy's off the mark.
On the bat.
Excellent.
Another Surrey batter. Once upon a time, he's one of the world's best. He's an overseas player. Decent beard on him.
Oh, Hashim Amla.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
How many we got?
We've got about five at the minute.
Dan Christian, is he still playing county cricket?
I think Christian's older than me, but he's not played this summer because he's been Australia duty. But
yeah,
I think he is. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. He's good. Captain Knotts to One Day Cup glory a few years ago.
How about a leg spinner who likes celebrating his wickets?
Imran Tahir.
There we go.
Nice. Good. Very good. He's a legend, that though.
How many we got?
Irish test bowler who's taken a five for
Rankin.
At Lords. No.
Tim Murta.
Yes.
Very good. Very good. You're doing well here, Chris.
A guy who's played for Holland, who plays for Essex.
Oh, Van der Merwe.
Van der Merwe.
No, he plays for Somerset down with me.
Yeah, he does.
So, Ryan Tenderscarter.
Tenderscarter. I couldn't think of his name. It was right on the tip of my tongue. Ryan Tenderscarter. What about Chris Rushforth at Durham? Is he older than you?
He's younger than me, mate. There's a couple of Northerners. There's one at Yorkshire, one of my old teammates.
He's now
captain.
Just bold, isn't he?
Live captain of the four-day team.
Pato. Steve Pato.
Pato.
Love that. What about Brezzy? Is he older than you, Brezzy?
No, Brezzy's younger than me. Again, someone serious mileage, but is
You're
younger than
older
me.
Than Tim Bresnan? Are you serious?
No, he's been around since the 80s, though, hasn't he? So.
That is ridiculous.
That is absolutely
brilliant. I mean, Brooks, you take this all in confidence, by the way. You know, I can see that you're actually starting to look a little bit despondent here on this Zoom call that we've got going. But actually, you need to just take it as a compliment. You're so youthful.
I've got a few greys, mate. I think it's because I'm not married and I don't have kids, so I've sort of clung on to my youth a little bit.
Get your manscaped on it. Go on, Millard.
Come on, concentrate. I've got one, but I'm not sure if you might be... He might be a bit younger than you. It's Boycott.
Dickhead.
He's not played this season, Chris. He don't count.
I'll run through the rest.
Yeah, do it.
Gareth Berg, who's a Northampton seamer. Michael Hogan, Glamorgan seamer, he's over 40. Daryl Mitchell, opening batter at Worcester.
Yeah.
Peter Trigo, my former Somerset teammate up at Notts. Mitchell Claydon, the seamer who's just retired this summer. And Wayne Madsen, the Derbyshire legend.
Oh, I've played against him in the Mansfield League.
Have you?
Yeah.
Wow. Did you bowl at him, Chris?
No. I think I hid. Somewhere on the boundary.
Brooksy, that was good. That was good. And to be fair,
great. Well done, Brooksy.
Some illustrious names still going as well above you. I'd love you to get to one stage to get to the top of the list, the oldest player still playing.
That's a big ask, mate. That is a big ask.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair play. I mean, on a serious note, that's some serious effort, isn't it, from all those boys to still be going?
Yeah. Darren Stevens, like, I'm 37 now, and Darren Stevens is 45, isn't he?
Yeah.
45, 46. And the fact he can still go, knowing what my body feels like now bowling day in, day out. I know he didn't bowl as much early in his career, but he's an absolute legend. And how his body, how he looks after his body must be
crazy. Darren Stevens has got a Barmy Army 50 when he was 19. In
that's
Sweater.
That's the highlight of his long 45-year-long career, that one, isn't it?
It's been rumoured that he said that.
Well, we need to get him on the pod, actually. We'll get him on at some point. Brooksy, that was a good quiz. Before we finish our intro and we get listening to Callum, Callum was great, wasn't he? And it was not really, let's be honest, not really an area or you know, discipline of cricket that I was really that interested or enlightened on before we spoke to Callum. But it was really good. It sounds like a really good thing, doesn't it? And in a country and time where there's not actually that many good things happening, I think the disability cricket is brilliant and it's much needed. So he was really nice lad. And Brooksy, you'll know some of the leagues. So he's played Bradford League and he's played sort of Lancashire Prem and all this kind of stuff. He's a serious cricketer, like serious, serious cricketer, proper, despite his disability.
He's a proper good cricketer, and he's probably not, he may not even be the best player in the team. Like, there's some very, very good cricketers in there. The Lords Taverners play against them every year, and I was asked to play for the Taverners this year against them, which they played a couple of weeks ago, because they were trying to bulk up the team, because usually it's a team full of ex-pros or celebrities and stuff, but they needed a few current or some talented younger lads who could give them a good game, because the disability side absolutely smashed them last year. And the game a couple of weeks ago, Steve Kirby was bowling the last over against the disability side, and there was a one of the lads with one arm was batting and just took curbs down all over the shop. Unbelievable. So these guys are properly talented guys. They take it serious. They turn up and warm up and they just smash people for fun. And yeah, fair play to them.
Love it. He was really good. He was really good, Chris. And actually, I think Chris, he'd got a bit of a pasting, hadn't he, on social media prior to us talking to him. And he spoke really brilliantly on that. And that was really good. Yeah, he was top
draw. Yeah, we saw that on social media. And as the Barmy Army, we support the England cricket team. No matter which team it is, men's, women's, disability team, we always support the England cricket team. So we were very quick to support Callum when he was getting some absolutely shocking messages on social media that... which you'll hear on the podcast, he turned into a positive and he's used it for good things. And we really wanted to get him on the show just to offer that voice and to a wider audience. And we think it's something that you'll all love to hear at home and you'll really enjoy this podcast.
Yeah, I think so. Hear, hear to that. Before we do, anything else, lads? Anything else to chuck in? No, we've not missed anything. Chris, go on.
I hope we come on this podcast having battered India in 5 days and really roughed Bummer up. That's what I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I'm going to reserve judgment. We, like you just said, we support England. So I'm going to reserve judgment of what might happen. But we'll see. We'll see. Fingers crossed. Come on, England. Cheers, Brooksy. Cheers, Chris. And good luck in the quarterfinals to Somerset of the T20 Blast competition. Come on, Somerset.
Go and get your slippers on, Brooksy, you old git.
You must.
As ever, remember to subscribe, share and comment and get in touch with us and all that kind of stuff. That would be much appreciated. But let's get into it. It's the Shackles Are Off podcast with Callum Flynn. I guess, but we're going to start as we do with everyone in the same place because I think it's, you know, why not? But actually, yours is it's a sad story, but it ends ultimately in happiness, doesn't it? But yours started with trampolining, bizarrely, your cricketing journey properly in the form that it's in now, didn't it? So just explain to our listeners why that was, why trampolining led to you ultimately being the England skipper.
Yeah, so it was my 40th birthday, basically. And I've got a hospital appointment. I've had a few problems for about 18 months on and off. So I just thought it was like a relative checkup at the local children's hospital in Manchester. And then I got taken onto like a cancer ward, but nothing clicked in my head because I was just a 14-year-old lad looking forward to getting home and having some sort of cake and opening some presents kind of thing. And I got told that day I had bone cancer. So, it was like the worst thing you can ever hear as a kid, or probably even an adult as well. Like, when you're that young, you don't expect to be told anything like that. So that hit me hard, asking if I was going to die, etc. straight away. That's sort of the first thought that comes to your head. Mm-hmm. And then after that, like you say, the trampolining story. We had it was a Thursday, and we had trampolining practice, and I was ready for, I was preparing for a school tournament. School competition, which obviously I weren't allowed to do because it was the following week and that's when I was starting chemotherapy. But I just ended up going to trampolining practice, even though the doctors didn't want me going, just because it was sort of, you know, I was just a young kid, sporty kid, and I just wanted to do it. As anything that sport offered up, like I wanted to give it a shot. And nothing was going to stop me going practicing with my mates. And yeah, that was sort of the last time I stepped on a trampoline. And I'm, like you say, I'm kind of glad I did it now.
Yeah.
Because of the titanium knee replacement, I'm not allowed to play sort of contact sports, so I can't even play football or anything like that. Yeah. So cricket was, luckily, I was already involved in cricket, and cricket was kind of the only sport that I could really go down in terms of what I played. So luckily, I weren't too bad at it.
I mean, I'm just trying to process that. You know, like 12 months kind of on from that, you're then playing cricket again. I mean, that's, you must kind of look back at 14, 15-year-old Callum and think, well done, mate, you know, because that takes like serious kind of bollocks, really, to kind of put yourself in that position to go back to playing cricket. And like you said, you know, you had been playing cricket previously to that. What went through your head? Can you remember? Like, I want to go back to playing cricket, because it's probably not something that you'd really thought about, or is it that you just missed it? What was it that took you back?
Yeah, just it was a sport that I always knew I wanted to play. So from 11, 12-year-old, I was trialling for Lancashire, and then that obviously got took away from me when I got diagnosed with cancer, and I never thought I'd play again, to be honest. And then returning the following season, playing with a runner all year, which was interesting, especially as a batter, as you know, you're relying on someone else to keep you in the game, really. So that was interesting. But it was just one of them things you get on with. You as a 14-year-old kid, and I knew nothing else other than putting my whites on, putting my spikes on, and going playing cricket, really. And that's all I wanted to do, sort of during treatment. It was 2009, so I think it was an Ashes year that year. So, so I was always, you know, getting the cricket magazines and stuff like that into hospital, and everything was just cricket for me. So once I knew there was a chance that I could play, like, I just took it straight away, and nothing held me back. Like, you're a young kid at 14, and like you say, you don't know anything else. If I was 17, 18, and I was getting a bit older and more adulting, then maybe it might have been a bit tougher. But because I was just 14, I just threw myself back into it.
Yeah.
And I probably shouldn't have done as much as what I did. So I had to have my titanium knee replacement redone when I was 17, because I was getting some stress fractures. And they were saying, like, at then I thought, oh, they might ask me to kind of stop playing here, but they haven't, thankfully. And ever since, it's been perfectly fine. But, like, who knows what my sort of mobility will be like when I'm 40, 50 years old. You know, I don't know what a titanium knee might look like back later on in life, but for now, I'm just taking each day as it comes and just throwing myself into cricket as much as I can still.
All right, sure. You'll be moving better than me, Callum. Matt Lowe was like part of my career.
you're obviously going to be a huge inspiration to so many people, Callum, for the story and the way you talk about it. It's like water off a duck's back, which is really something that we want to share that message further afield. But was there any influence that you can remember, either from your parents or an idol you look up to and you thought, yeah, well, if they can do it, so can I? Can you recall back to a moment where that had an impact on you?
No, I never sort of looked at like a celebrity or a figure that I looked up to really then. It was just sort of your standard sports people that you look up to, and it weren't because of a specific story. Obviously, being a Lancashire cricketer, it was obviously always Flintoff, obviously the one that you look up to instantly. So he was someone that I just looked up to as an everyday sort of hero. But in terms of sort of getting through the cancer and the tough journey, cancer was like a big part of our family, unfortunately. I lost both my nanas to cancer, so was kind of used to it, as awful as that sounds, in our family. So like that kind of language of talking about cancer and what happens here, what happens there, chemotherapy, etc., was used to it a little bit. Obviously I wasn't as a young kid, so it kind of took me away. But in terms of the family, I had that good family strength and all that support and motivation. I got that from my family, really, all my family and friends. So I didn't really look up to anyone in terms of specific, oh, they've been through cancer and they beat it. It was more just your standard sporting heroes that I looked up to, really.
You find a disability cricket team. And for many of our listeners, if you don't mind, Skipper, right, there's going to be a lot of people who think, what is a disability team? Because the England team, you've got the visually impaired, you've got the deaf 11 as well, haven't you? You're learning disability. So what's a disability cricket team look like? What's it formed of? Is it just people with any kind of disability? You know, you tell our listeners about it. And also just take us back to you going into that kind of setup. And you had immediate success, didn't you, pretty much straight away for Lancs and that. So just try and explain that, you know, the initial going in and trying to work it all out and what it was all about, and then your kind of initial success.
Yeah, so it was for the first four groups that we have. So I'll start on the actual disability team so the listeners can get some kind of understanding. So we have the physical disability side, which I'm part of. We have the learning disability side. Like you say, the visually impaired and the deaf side. So each squad has some kind of profiling system. So as a physical disability side, you have a science, medical, physio lead that comes and runs like assessments on you, and you kind of get like a number or a category that you fall into, and it in terms of like your movement and stuff like that. So I was obviously a lower limb. Movement range sort of disability. Mine was 40 when I was 14, 15, so I can't remember what the actual name of my range was, but you get like a wide range of disabilities. So there's actually two lads who suffered bone cancer in the squad. So it's me and Jamie Goodwin. He had exactly the same as me. He came in a couple of years later, which was a bit like surreal, really, because bone cancer was such a disability, a cancer that no one really knew of. And then you've got like Liam Thomas, who's got like a blade, and he's our wicket keeper. So he's like, he's got a prosthetic leg and he's a wicket keeper. And like just seeing him keep, he keeps in the Bradford League, which is Jack probably shows certain might have played in there when he was younger or something. It's like one of the best standards around Yorkshire, and like it's a proper ECB Premier League, I believe. So it's a really good standard.
Everyone who plays in the Bradford League thinks it's the best league in the country.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I did 2 years there myself. They all do say that. but you also get upper body disabilities. So you get cerebral palsies. You got Matt Askin, who's missing his... Is it right hand? Yeah. No, it's his left. Left. So he's got half his arm, basically. And he backs up one arm, and it's like ridiculous just how he does it. And then you've got the learning disability lads, which I think they have to prove some kind of medical form from the doctors, which gets them their qualification. And same with the deaf lads, they've got to provide like an audiogram, their most relevant audiogram to prove. And then the visually impaired, I don't know how the visually impaired goes actually, but that's just a total different form of cricket, which is unbelievable. You see some of the videos and how they dive, throw themselves around to stop the ball. It's literally, it's crazy. But when I first got into it, I was a bit shocked and a bit taken back by the standard, really. Like I say, I was 15, got taken down to a local club in Lancashire where there was training. And the first thing I seen was someone pushing himself up in a wheelchair, bowing leg spin. Wow. And it was crazy because I think he's like he's a Paralympic weightlifter, bodybuilder kind of guy. And he was classed as not disabled enough, I believe, to actually go into the Olympics, which is a bit surreal.
Wow.
But I think he was British weightlifting champion and everything. So if he went into the Olympics, he would have been close to winning something, which was really distraught for him. But then it was, like you said, I was 14, 15, I was trialling for Lancashire. So at first I was a bit took back by the standard and just how they get around their disabilities. I was just used to mine. I just cracked on with mine. And some of them really affect theirs. I'm lucky where it doesn't have a massive impairment on my movements, really. I run with a bit of a limp, and you can see that, but I'm still quite quick across the ground. But you see some of the guys, they need runners, they need help in the field, etc. So that is a different form of cricket. But you just get used to it. And you look at the England PD team, and we took the standard to a whole new level in the past few years. And we got beat by India in 2019. And it was just, the standard was ridiculous.
Yeah.
India have like, I think they had like 500, 600 people at their trials.
Shut up, seriously.
And I don't even think that covers the whole country at the minute, because I think there's a bit of, it's not under BCCI, it's not under their governing body, basically. Mm. So they kind of got to work around that. So it's hard for them to get all the players there. Well, we've got like 20 people to pick from. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And we're playing against like a whole 500 people from India who are trying to get into their squad. And we're just trying to scrape together 15, 20.
It's only going to grow, well, right, though, with the exposure and with the way things are going. It all seems to be more apparent in the media, which is great.
Yeah, it's like, as if we wanted to lose to one team, as weird as it sounds, we wanted to lose to India because we knew they would be the country that could take it on to the next level with how much they love cricket over there. You know, I don't need to tell you guys what it's like for cricket in India. It's ridiculous. So I think we was actually hoping to go over there. 2019, once they won, I think they invited us over there. So was looking to arrange a tour, but obviously with COVID, etc., I don't think that'll happen for a few years now.
So that's not under the ICC, though, is it? The World Cup stuff, Callum. Is that right?
Yeah, so I don't think the ICC have bought into it fully.
They need to.
Which is a bit crazy because we did a lot of our first tours. So we did 2012, 2014 and 2016 at the ICC Academy. And they came out once just to watch us. And like the headquarters is literally 15 yards from the ground. It's ridiculous. And they just... I mean, I don't want to say too much about the ICC. You know, that's their problem. Unfortunately, they're missing out on a product that could definitely sell to a lot of people who love cricket, and it could definitely make the game a bit more sort of for everyone, as we like to say. Mm. So yeah,
they're not going to be able to ignore it much longer, are they?
Well, they can't.
No, hopefully not.
They can't.
Hopefully not. Especially with, like you say, the big teams like India getting involved. India have, so they went, the ECB went over with the VI, the visually impaired squad, and they had 10,000 people watching the India final, and it was ridiculous. It's like,
brilliant.
Just the fans they get over there. It's like you say, you can, hopefully soon enough they can't ignore it, and they have to buy into some kind of international structure for us, which would be absolutely perfect for us.
What was it like for you guys playing India, Callum? Was it getting tasty? Have they got a few gobby players, or is it all quite friendly and respectful?
Afghanistan was worse.
Really?
Afghanistan was really feisty. There was pepper in your face, which is what we liked.
So you were brought up in the Bradford League, so you know all about that, don't you?
Yeah, we enjoyed it. There's a couple of Manchester lads and a couple of Yorkshire lads getting right involved. Afghanistan was probably the most aggressive team, and there was a bit sly with some of the tactics. So these are the things that go on in the disability cricket thing. So we was playing Pakistan once, and one of their batters wanted a runner, which was fair enough. We allowed him one. And then it comes to them bowling, he's running out 30 yards, and we're like, well, are you running out 30 yards and you can't run 22 yards for a single? We're like, it's a bit ridiculous.
Saving himself.
So it's little things like that. But you just got to laugh at disability cricket. You just got to take them things on the chin, and that's where hopefully the ICC come involved. You can tighten up the structure a little bit, and the profiling and the elements of what is a disability and what isn't, I suppose.
How have you found the professionalism then? Because I'm just looking, your five-team World Cup, your first World Cup that you played, actually, when you won player and batter of the series. Sort of throw that one in there so you don't have to. And and you've absolutely smashed it. But, I mean, how was the professional sort of set up for that? Because if there's no ICC involved, it kind of begs the question, you know, where are the team hotels and the gala dinners and all that kind of stuff to open the tournament? Was that kind of thing all there, or did you find that it was kind of a little bit, you know, for a better word, tin pot? You know, how did you find that?
So the first few that we had was just between us and Pakistan. So say we go back to 2012 and 2014, was based at the ICC Academy in Dubai, which, you know, when you go, you get looked after like your actual, you know, you're royalty there. No matter who you are, walking through them gates, they look after you, and it's amazing. And they treat you like full-time professionals over there. The nets, the facilities, you know, just the hotels over there as well. It's really good. And then going on to 2015 in Bangladesh, that was a bit of a surreal 2 weeks, in terms of we was based at some kind of, I think it was like some kind of school college campus in Dhaka.
Right.
And it was called the BKSP. And it's basically a hostel we're staying in. We've got there at like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, pitch black, no lights, staying on the top floor, got to carry our bags up, no lift. And we was all on the bottom floor. A lad who we call Scouse, obviously, you can probably assume where he's from. He needed a toilet, so he's gone round the corner. Oh, where's the toilet? And they showed him. It's just a hole in the floor. And like, he's just, you know, we're just like, oh no, you know, and it's just surreal, like the sort of accommodation we got there, but it brought us closer together. And I think without something like that, as weird as it sounds, I don't think we would have won the tournament, because we lost our first game and we had to win every game then. And the only entertainment you can find was just being together and just enjoying each other's company. Yeah. So it was constantly living in each other's pockets, and the togetherness at the end of that tour was surreal.
Yeah.
That was probably the turning point for in terms of how professional it started to get. We went back to Dubai in 2016 again. We played the final at the Dubai stadium, the main one. So that was really good. And then 2018 and 19, we played it over here, which was our first sort of tri-series and World Series over here. And it's the first time we've hosted any other PD team. And Ian Martin, who's the head of disability cricket at the ECB, you know, when he puts on a show, he really wants to put it on spectacular. And the ECB, you know, the amount of investment and support they give us, you know, is really professional. And that showed in terms of the coaching appointments that they made for us. So we had Ian Salisbury, who was named as the head coach, and we had James Kirtley as our assistant.
Nice.
Luckily, Sol's kind of brought Kurtz in as a close friend, so we had that kind of we got lucky with that one.
Brilliant.
But it really turned, and you know, we're so thankful for them too, you know, big names in terms of English cricket to give us their time and effort into, at the end of the day, 15 amateur disability lads who just play for England on, you know, for 36 days a year, probably. You know, we don't get paid, we don't get anything for doing it. We just enjoy it. And for them to give us their time when they could probably go and coach at some kind of county team, county setup, or maybe just even a private school, we really appreciated that, and we appreciated the support of the ECB to sort of push for them kind of appointments.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
And that's
when it started to get more professional. That's when you get your physiology, your strength and conditioning coaches, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So, yeah, it was really good.
I was going to look. I'm going to ask you about Hugo Hammond shortly, and fans of Love Island will be. I've got to, haven't I? I'm sorry, it started. I've got to ask you, Callum. But well, I'll ask you about that in a minute because there is kind of a serious point there as well with that. But there's sort of also something a bit more serious that I do want to just touch on. We have to touch on it because you've sort of turned this into a tremendous positive, which is absolute credit to you. But you know, for all the sort of opportunity and things going brilliantly. In terms of, you know, like you just mentioned with Salisbury and Kirtley and the strength and conditioning coaches and people sort of waking up a little bit. You've had some pretty shitty things said to you on social media with the kit around the kit launch and that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was kind of a different level. You'll have had shitty things said to you your whole life. You know, a lot of people have with disabilities, and that is wrong in itself. But when it's kind of in the national consciousness, it's a different level, isn't it? It's a step up, and you probably found that, I'm guessing, pretty difficult to deal with. But you know, have you come out the right side of that now? I think a lot of people sort of saw that sort of blow up on Twitter and stuff, and saw how the ECB handled it and stuff. Have you managed to come out the right side of that now, mate? Because I think a lot of people will want to know about that.
Yeah, it was tough. Like you say, I've never had that kind of publicity. Like everyone's eyes on me just for the looking at that kind of picture, just to see what the kit is and the judging everything else as well. So I've never had that. I've had the odd article go on the ECB pages and et cetera, but it was nothing in terms of that volume, really. So yeah, it was a bit of a crappy one. But like normally I'm used to, like you say, normally you're used to the odd comment here and there, but it was just a volume of them. It really shook on me. So I was, Twitter and Instagram was going off all day, and then I seen the post on Facebook, and I seen hundreds of comments, and I was just like, so I just spoke to the ECB, and thankfully they took it down. They was excellent in terms of pouncing on it as soon as they could, and getting some kind of message out. So I can't thank the ECB enough. But when you go through something that, like I've been through, and some of the other disability lads have been through, you know, you just deal with them things a little bit. Like normally it wouldn't affect me. Normally I'd just be like, it is what it is. That's just life these days, unfortunately. But like I say, it was just the volume of them, I think. It just really got to me that day. And like you say, DCB have been fantastic. Hopefully there's been some positive things that have come off it, really. Like being able to appear on the podcast here, talking about disability cricket. You know, the odd report in The Cricketer and other various cricket media outlets. So there has been some positives which has come from it. So, you know, every bad sort of story, try and turn positive, and hopefully we're doing that a little bit.
You've done a fantastic job in doing that as well. You just explained how much of a good ambassador for the game you are, and it's really, really refreshing to see that the way you have managed to spin it to a positive, and the ECB have done that as well, and quite right. But one question I've got for you, Callum, is to the young lad sat at home that might have a disability, what one piece of advice would you give to them to keep going and to chase the dream of playing for England or doing whatever they want to do? What could you give to them?
Everyone says like the old never give up line. And you will find sort of times where you do give up. I give up plenty of times during my chemotherapy journey and stuff like that. But then you just, you know, you're down for a day or two. You have a look back, and then you just reflect, and then you just kind of get back on the saddle, as they call it, and you go again. So I think like, I like to talk about, like, I'm a coach as well, and I like to talk about failure and stuff, and not being afraid of failing, because I think there's this bad little, I think everyone thinks fail is a bad thing and a bad word, when I try and look at it as a positive, where if I go into a training session, I want to try and push myself onto the borders of failing, so I know that there's something there to improve on, in a way. So for disability people out there who just want to give some kind of sport a go, like you say, I'll just jump on the saddle and just give it a crack. Even if you fall at the first hurdle, you can then reflect on it and see what you need to do to get over that hurdle, and then attack the next one. So yeah, just look at it as a positive, and then always just try and reflect and see what you can do better, really, as a sportsman, as a person.
Such a great message. Well, I just love your positivity, mate. You're obviously a very strong, brave, resilient man, what you've been through. But just how positive, and how you talk about cricket and just having a laugh with your mates. So you're just playing it for the pure passion of it. And that's why I play. That's why Chris and Greggy love the game as well. They just love being around their mates and hanging out. And cricket's a great game for bringing people together, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And all the best, mate. Thanks very much for coming on with the boys. It's been fantastic.
Cheers, I appreciate it.
Story, and we'll give a bit, a lot more exposure to disability cricket.
Well, talking of exposure, and I know I'm joking about it, and Callum, you'll be absolutely... In fact, actually, it's only half an hour as we record this until you'll be flicking ITV2 on, isn't it? Because you so for those listeners who aren't initiated, I best explain, actually. So Hugo Hammond, who plays with you boys, doesn't he? Who's got a cracking...
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So... He's not played for 3 years, actually.
Oh, is he not? Right, okay.
No, so he's not actually been in the squad now since, I think it's 2018.
Okay.
I think that's when he officially left the squad. We're still kind of in touch with Hugo a little bit. Every now and again, we see him on the socials and we come across him. Some of the lads still speak to him. So some of his friends and stuff are still in the squad. So like you say, we're always in some kind of touch, whether that's on social media or physical presence around him. Mm. But yeah, it's been interesting to see him on there. It was a bit surreal to when we found out that he was actually going on. It was a bit weird that someone so close to you in terms of someone that you played with, etc., or just been your friends with, that's going on a show like that. It's madness.
I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, going a bloke who's not played for 3 years is, you know, going on Love Island is going to all of a sudden get 10,000 people through the gates to watch you boys. But there is a serious point around it, in the sense that, you know, he has got a disability himself. And he's been kind of watched by millions every single week on the telly, you know, hopefully giving a decent account of himself and also just entertaining a few people, because let's be honest, that's what that programme's all about. But that's ultimately what you guys want to do, isn't it? Just kind of be in that sort of public space of entertaining and people not really giving a hoot whether you've got a disability or not. And that's kind of the level which you hopefully will be getting to in the near future.
Yeah, and like you say, I think Hugo's the first sort of disabled participant on the actual programme, so it'll be nice for him to do, hopefully highlight that at some stage, and hopefully he can talk about his story and journey on the programme. I'm sure he'll somehow slip it in that he's played for England before to one of the girls.
He better do. You've got to drop what you can on that show.
Of course you do.
Like, I think you guys tweeted, didn't you, saying he's actually a keeper. So hopefully he slips the old wicket keeper, I'm actually a keeper kind of line in there. That'll be great. But Hugo's definitely someone who'll throw something like that in there. But yeah, like you say, it's just for someone with a disability to hopefully just go on there, show his story off a little bit, have a bit of fun. And then for us guys, it's, like I say, we're kind of the same. We, you know, we've all got disabilities and we're just trying to have fun and just show our stories off and show ourselves off the best way possible, really.
Awesome. Callum, it's an absolute pleasure, mate. Really good of you to come on, and love talking to you. And what have you got coming up? Is it busy summer? When can people next watch you in action?
Yeah, so it's a fairly quiet summer just because of everything with COVID going on. I think we've got a bit of Disability Celebration Day. I'm pretty certain Worcestershire New Road are hosting. So that'll be good, fun, which is, I think that's the 8th of August. I think we play the Lord Taverners around August as well. And then I think we've got some kind of fun event coming up in September, which I don't think I'm allowed to say anything about yet. so I'll keep my mouth quiet about that one. But hopefully that kind of this kind of event that we're doing expands the disability profile in terms of disability cricket and stuff. So hopefully that'll be a good bit of fun for us.
End the year off well. Lord's Taverners game would be great to get to. I've been asked if I can get to that one. So I'm an ambassador for Lord's Tabs.
Yeah. We played them. That was our only game last year, actually. And it was really nice because the Lord Taverners do so much for just disability kids, never mind disability cricketers, but just the disability kids in the UK. They do so much for them. So it was nice for us to kind of play them and put some kind of charity day on with them, just to kind of say thank you, because they're our kind of first stepping stone onto the disability cricket pathway. So it was really good to link up with them. So that'll be enjoyable again this summer.
Well, what's happening in September, mate? What's this event?
Yeah, come on. You've got to give us a Barmy Army exclusive. He's probably sworn to secrecy and we're going to wind him up.
Okay, I might get told off by the disability ads at the ECB. but yeah, it should be some kind of fun tournament, hopefully. So yeah, it should be. It's definitely a good opportunity for the disability profile in England. So fingers crossed it all goes well.
Callum, yeah, absolute fine. Pleasure, mate. Pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it a lot. And yeah, we'll have to talk to you again soon. And feel free to, if any of the other boys fancy coming on, give them a nudge. We'd love to hear from them.
Yeah, definitely.
Top stuff.
Thanks for having me again, boys. I really appreciate it.
No, top man. No, really.
Thanks,
really,
have you on, mate. We'll make sure to talk to buy the phones for your pal as well. He's on at 9 o'clock.
See how he does in 20 minutes' time.
Cheers then, bud. Take it easy.
Cheers. Thank you.
Take care, buddy.
Podcast Network.